I start with these words from the Reverend Forrest Church, a Unitarian Universalist minister who died in 2009 after a long experience with cancer. These words come from his final book entitled Love and Death, My Journey Through the Valley of the Shadow. He writes, "Death is central to my definition of religion. Religion is our human response to being alive and having to die. We are not the animal with advanced language or tools as much as we are the religious animal. Knowing that we must die, we question what life means. The answers we arrive at may not be religious answers, but the questions death forces us to ask are at heart religious questions. Where did I come from? Who am I? Where am I going? What is life's purpose? What does this all signify?" He goes on to say, "Death is not life's goal, only its terminus. The goal is to live in such a way that our lives will prove worth dying for. The one thing that can't be taken from us, even by death, is the love that we give away before we go." Here at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, we participate in a non-creedal tradition. This means that we don't have a creed. We don't have a set statement of beliefs to which you must adhere in order to belong here. So among our ranks, in our chairs, we have a wide diversity of belief about God or no God, about life and afterlife. And that's good. And we admit that we're not sure about a lot of things, and that's okay. But one thing of which we are certain is that we are given this life as a gift, and that we must use it to the best of our ability. We focus not on beliefs, but on actions. And so because life is a gift, because it is limited, we believe it to be infinitely precious. We're not waiting for a coming eternity. These days that we have are not promised to last forever. You might say they're a limited commodity. Our days are a miraculous gift that we are called to use with responsibility to improve the world and share our love. As Forrest Church said, the goal is to live in such a way that our lives will prove worth dying for. And so as a people of faith, we often spend our time focusing on life because of these differences in beliefs. We focus on life and not death. We don't worry much about the afterlife, and we definitely aren't trying to save anyone's soul. But because we focus so much on life, we can easily forget that death is a reality. The Buddhist path allows for this reality to be contemplated regularly. In fact, the first of the Buddhist Four Noble Truths is that life involves suffering and death. In order to become a Buddhist, to follow the Buddhist path, that is the first thing you have to accept. This reality that none of us are going to get out of this alive can free us from the clinging that can happen to ideas, to fear, and worst of all, to stuff. But because our society, and sometimes our faith, allows us to forget that we will die, we then go about our lives as if we might live forever, not wanting to make plans or talk about what we hope for in death. Now, we can't always choose. Sometimes death comes suddenly. It's an illness or an accident or a heart attack. And sometimes we are given a little more warning. When death comes with some warning, we want to be able to get as much life as possible out of those last weeks or days or hours. And for each person, that thing, that quality of life, might mean something different. The surgeon Atul Gawande talks about end of life and the medical obsession with extension of life at all costs in his book, Being Mortal. The central message of the book is that we need to talk early and often about what end of life treatments and trade-offs that we consider desirable and tolerable. One of the stories that he shares in his book is this, quote, "Well, if I'm able to eat chocolate ice cream and watch football on TV, then I'm willing to stay alive." That was a spinal tumor patient telling his daughter that. He said, "I'm willing to go through a lot of pain if I have a shot at that." And that crucial insight guides his daughter through tough decisions when a subsequent spinal surgery goes badly. The most poignant storytelling in the book is when Gawande's own father, who also develops a spinal tumor, decides that for him, who he's also a surgeon, that ice cream and football are not enough. His fear of paralysis dictates the different set of treatment choices for him. And these two examples illustrate that there's no right answer, and there's no wrong answer, except perhaps, Gawande says, "Gosh, Doc, I don't know what she would have wanted, so I guess you better keep going." He says that's the only wrong answer. The kindest and most loving thing that you can do for your family and your friends is to tell them what you want at the end of your life, to make your wishes known so that they can be prepared for that hopefully far away eventuality. It's important to have this conversation with our loved ones about what we want and how we want to be cared for and what kinds of medical interventions that we do or do not want and what we want to be done with our remains after we die. Now, the paperwork is crucial, a medical power of attorney or an advance directive, for example. But if you're sitting there feeling like, well, done that, check mark, I encourage you that alongside the paperwork, and perhaps even more important than the paperwork, is the actual conversation that you have with the people you love. Now, no one loves this conversation. It's not a fun one. Sometimes it's the person discussing their wishes that doesn't want to have it, and sometimes it's the person you're trying to discuss with. Mom, don't talk about that. Don't be morbid. But it's really the most loving thing we can do, because when the time comes and you're nearing the end of your life, your children, your parents, your loved ones, we don't want them to be shocked by the decision that you put in your writing. Mom said what in her paperwork? We want everyone to be in agreement about what you wanted. And now, in order to have that conversation, you have to know what you want. You have to think about your wishes. What do you want to prioritize? Chocolate and football? Or is it your mobility and independence? Do you want to be completely free of pain, even if that means being unconscious? Or are you willing to tolerate pain as long as you can be awake and aware of what's going on? Now, if you're not sure what your priorities are, I encourage you to borrow this deck of cards from me. I have a bunch of decks. I've already given a few away. Please give them back when you're done. But this is a game called Go Wish. It's set up like Go Fish. It's a card game. And each of the cards in the deck has different priorities for end of life. And I've seen it used really beautifully. This card says, to maintain my dignity. So it helps you prioritize what those wishes are, and it's an easy way to start the conversation with your family. So if you want to borrow a deck, come to my office. I have about 10. We also encourage you to think a little bit about your own memorial service, what your wishes are for that, and if you want to do that, you can come meet with me, or when she's back from sabbatical, you can always meet with Reverend Leah. And we'd be happy to help you think about what readings or music or other elements would be meaningful in a memorial service. Did you know that we have a file for every person who has let us know their memorial service wishes in the front office? So that way, if the time comes and someone calls and tells us that you have passed away and they're wanting to plan a memorial service, we can say something like, "I'm so sorry for your loss. Yes, your father has left a bunch of stuff here that he would like for his memorial. One of our ministers will work with you to plan the service." What a relief for them. So much less that they then have to think about and worry about. They don't want to have to guess what you wanted. And if you don't feel like meeting with one of us, you just want to see a memorial planning form, we have one of those on our website. We have a link at the bottom of our page that has stuff about rituals. So if you go to our website, fvuuf.org, and you click on services, it's a drop-down menu, rituals and ceremonies. So fvuuf.org, services, rituals and ceremonies, and on that page, we have a link to help you both with advanced directives as well as planning your memorial service. And you can just bring those into the office and we'll start a file for you. I often meet with people who are sick or dying and they tell me they don't care what happens after they die. I don't don't care if they're cremated or buried. They don't care what songs are sung at their memorial. What do I care? I'm not even going to be here, they say. And that's true. You won't. But others will be here. And we don't want your loved ones to fight over what they think you wanted. We don't want a difference of opinion about whether to continue your treatment or to cremate your body or where to host your memorial service to cause a family fight. You don't want that. You want them to feel confident and empowered to carry out your wishes, not to agonize over hard choices. So consider that telling people what you want is not you trying to be a control freak. It's freeing them from even more decisions when they should be processing their own sadness and grief. Similarly, making plans for your worldly possessions after you die is also a gift. Making choices about where you want your home or your car, your money, your life insurance to go, to family, to charities, to the fellowship. Those documents are needed not only because they provide clear instructions, but because they free your loved ones from making even more hard choices or struggling through court battles to determine where your last gifts will go. The Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, died earlier this year, and she had no will or trust for her fortune. The court appointed her niece, Sabrina Garrett Owens, to be the executor of the estate. And Family Harmony has so far allowed that to go as planned. Things are going smoothly, but who knows? It's going to take months or even years to work out all of these details. And Miss Owens is the only person who can make these decisions now. The Forbes magazine article that I read says, under Michigan law, all four of Aretha's children are equal beneficiaries to the estate, but they do not have an equal say on how it is administered. To the contrary, Owens now has all decision-making power. She can solicit input from Aretha's sons if she wants to, but she doesn't have to. And those decisions are going to be different, difficult. How are Aretha's royalties to be managed? What should be done about the expected numerous offers of sanctioned movies or documentaries or books or specials about her life? Should Aretha's songs be used for commercials? If so, which ones? Should her image be licensed to sell products? The article goes on and on and on about the legal and financial ramifications of the fact that she died with no will. Now, it's my assumption that none of us has the kind of estate that the Queen of Soul had. If you do, be sure to list the fellowship in your estate plans. Just kidding, but really, no, really do that. But really, we should all be doing that. We should be thinking about where these things are going to go. The fact remains that the questions, the plans, the problems, the dragged-out court proceedings can be prevented with a simple document that can be completed online for free, or mostly free. Our own planned giving committee will be hosting an informational session today, right after this service. It's about an hour, it's informal, and we will even have childcare available if you want to stay and hear from an estate planning lawyer just about how to get started on all this stuff. So thinking about these things, wills and estates, but also end-of-life wishes, considerations for after death, memorial plans, these are important things. The holidays are coming, and as we practice our November theme of conscience, I invite you to take the upcoming holiday gatherings as a chance to take the opportunity to think about your wishes, to have important conversations about those wishes, and to clear your conscience and share a gift with the people that you love. Pumpkin pie isn't the easiest time to have this conversation, but it might be the most loving. I encourage you to do that. May it be so.